Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is a March 5th. That's right. We're in the third month of the first quarter of 2024. Like, it's going by at warp speed. March 5th edition of the MSP Initiative, MSP Talk. We're going to get some good, you know, some homework out of the way, like some housekeeping, and then we're going to get into the good stuff. So buckle up. Try and do this pretty quickly so we can use the rest of the time on other things. So MSPInitiative.com. This is everything that we do in one place. So if you go to sessions, this very session is being recorded and we will put it here in both podcast and video format. So regardless of how you follow this, like us, follow us, share us, it's all there. Whether it's in audio or video format is up to you. We have two MSP Community Minds events coming up this year. One is in Nashville coming up April 17th and 18th. So just at the end of next month. And then the other one is in Denver, which is going to be on July 24th and 25th. So, you know, Nashville comes first, and we already have all of our speakers and workshop people posted, and a schedule is being posted now with how the format works. But effectively, two full days of content. In the morning, we're doing MSP panels. So we're taking people who are willing to come and share on various topics, who are people like you, and then workshops by experts from around the industry. And these workshops are not death by PowerPoint. They are two-hour actually education sessions that you will walk away with something depending on what you're looking to learn. So that being said, check out MSPinitiative.com under Community Minds. By the way, this event is 100% free for you to register and attend. You still got to get there and you still got to leave your business for a couple of days, but we're not charging $3.99, $4.99, $9.99, $12.99. No, we will feed you. We will, you know, nighttime activity you. We will, you know, hopefully train you or teach you something. And all you got to do is show up if you're an MSP, register for free. Then, of course, we have our MSP community block parties. You know, these are, you know, various formats throughout the year. And you can see all of the ones that we intend to do this year, both in the US, both in Europe, both in Australia. The first one is coming up at the end of this month. Our good friends at Enable are running something called Enable Empower in Dallas. So if you're looking for an event to go to and you're happen to like Dallas or be in that area, check out Enable Empower Dallas. We will be doing an MSP community block party March 26th from 9 to 2 a.m. Or until you can't stand anymore. No, definitely want to keep you standing. So we will be doing an MSP community block party with this event on March 24th. So if you happen to be in the area, you don't have to be going to Enable event to actually join us if you're an MSP. Again, free. How much more can I give you for free? I guess a lot, but definitely check that out. We have some community offers. These are just, you know, special like deals, I guess, or listings that people have put out there on our site. If, you know, if that helps you, great. If not, all good. And just a quick calendar of stuff that we know that that's coming up, all in one place. But I know our friend on this call will tell you her more robust version of that in a minute. But without further ado, that is all of the housekeeping. MSPinitiative.com. If you don't know how to spell initiative, put in the Google, it'll spell check you, I promise, and you'll get there. So without further ado, I would like to bring somebody I've known for, maybe since 2016, I feel like. It's been a long time. 2016, it's been a long time. Caitlin from Channel Programs joins us today on the podcast. How you doing today, Caitlin?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. Long overdue. I'm very excited. Yes.
No, I always start off these sessions with like, a little bit about you, right? Because like, I love everybody's journey. Like they're all different and like they go through, you know, twists and turns and roller coaster-ish moves. But you know, if you want to like, just tell us how you started and how did you get to today, right? So that people know like your background, and then we'll get on to the good stuff.
Yeah. So I had like a little bit of an indirect journey into the channel, I feel. I ran out of money doing my master's degree in university. I have a double major in criminology and psychology. I ended up having a really good friend work at IT Glue. She was the director of human and people there, people and resources, whatever the fancy title was at that time. And they needed an event planner. And I ended up picking up that role in, oh my gosh, it must've been like June, 2016 now.
There it is.
And it was kind of while IT Glue was like right on the rise. So we were doing tons of events, tons of parties. I ended up being able to travel with IT Glue a little bit, fell in love with the MSP and vendor community. and never went back to university. And so when IT Glue sold to Kaseya, I left and I went to AVIC and helped them build out their events and community plan, took them from doing about, I'd say like 10, 12 events a year to over 100 events globally, right before pandemic in 2019. And then pandemic happened, obviously. Our industry changed for the good and for the worst. And then they ended up getting acquired by private equity in 2021, at which point I started my Adventure with Channel program. And I am doing the same thing here, building community, vendor relationships, MSP relationships. And do not miss the university days. And I'm very happy with the path that I ended up choosing. I
thought everybody has all these wilder, like Van Wilder stories from university. Okay. All right.
No, but shocking enough. So like in getting to travel to the United States as much as I have now, since being in the channel, I have learned that university culture in Canada and university culture in the United States is extremely different. So I did not have the same university experience that most people did.
I can hear what you're saying. I mean, as a guy who lives outside of Philadelphia my whole life, if you can get into Penn State main campus here in Pennsylvania, like, which by the way is in the middle of nowhere, right? It's like, you know, it's like you have Philly, you got Pittsburgh, and you got like farms in between, and that's in the middle of all the farms. But man, it's 50,000 people in the middle of those farms, and man, do they have a good time.
When I was going through the recruitment process with AVIC, they flew me out to spend a few days in the office to like make sure that I really liked it and wanted to move to Ontario. And Waterloo University is one of the largest like tech schools in Canada. And they put me like right in the middle of like university housing in an Airbnb there during homecoming week. Mm. And that is where I got my first taste of like what it could be like to be part of like the traditional type of university experience. It was nothing I'd ever seen before, coming from universities in BC. And also like I work during university, I didn't live on campus and I definitely didn't have time to party. But there's a small part of me that feels like I missed out on something. Like, did I miss out on like funneling beer on the roof of a sorority house at some point?
Sounds like it.
It's not too late. But I do feel like there's a small part of me that I'm like, when I was there, I was like, what is this?
Okay. All right. This is now filling in gaps, I think. This is a good conversation. Okay. So channel program.
Yes.
People who don't really understand what it is, can you like give us a sentence? What is channel program?
Yeah, so channel program originally came out of the concept that we wanted to empower MSPs to really be able to shop for and engage with the vendors on their terms. I know that this will be part of the conversation that you truly appreciate. No one likes going to events and then being spammed 100 times after for dropping their business card offs to like win their kids a Lego set type of thing. So, in as well, like pandemic, I think we saw a lot of it before pandemic, but really during pandemic, we saw the cost of events really rise. And a lot of the new technologies that were coming into the space, it wasn't attainable for them to be able to go to events, not only as like a sponsor with a traditional booth, but getting stage time is so expensive in our industry. So we really wanted to level the playing field and offer every single vendor the same opportunity to be able to speak and engage with the MSP audience, regardless of how much money they have behind them, how long they've been in the industry. So we created a platform that really empowers the MSPs to be able to shop for and engage with vendors on their terms. That has kind of grown and evolved now. So we do have a lot of virtual events like Engage, our All Stars events. We do our giveaways every summer and holidays, and really trying to put the vendors that maybe don't have the opportunity to get in touch with MSPs the avenues to do so in an affordable manner. But then we have now expanded into the side of things where MSPs are able to evaluate and manage their stacks and solutions on channel program and really get an idea of the products that they're bringing into their businesses so they can find gaps and overlaps, as well as manage the contracts with their vendors so they can see how much they're spending in each category every month if they need to supplement by shopping for new vendors in certain categories. We've also made it easier to break up with your vendors by allowing MSPs to be able to customize the notifications for any renewal terms on their contracts that they have as well. So being sure that you're able to negotiate and save those monies, but also get out of contracts that maybe you aren't seeing to be the best fit for your businesses anymore.
Interesting. It's not Valentine's Day. It's breakup day. Okay, cool. Yeah. All good. That's interesting. All right. So like, basically what I'm gathering is like you've created a new experience to kind of like break the mold a little bit and like have people engage digitally on their own terms.
Yeah. And we're really trying to take away that one-to-many relationship that a lot of MSPs have with all of their vendors and consolidate it into one place. So they really just have to go to one destination in order to be able to engage with everybody they're currently working with, but then also that they want to possibly be working with in the future.
Okay. So like, hey, there's 10,000 notifications. I'm just going to like try and put them all in one place rather than, you know, emails left and right.
Yes, that, and especially with partner portals as well. Partner portals are one of those things we've found with MSPs that are completely underutilized. I would be shocked if 10 to 15% utilization is seen across a majority of the vendors that we work with. With that being said, being able to provide the MSP with a gateway to access multiple partner portals and vendor engagement materials and things like that from one destination has really helped grow our platform of MSPs. We're approaching 7,000 unique MSPs, I believe now.
Nice. Yeah. Well, you know what? There is a lot of noise and you're right. I don't have time to log into 50 vendor portals every week, month. Yeah. If I need something, I will. But like, other than that, I'm probably not paying attention.
Yeah, it's true. And it's definitely something in the space that we've heard MSPs talk about before. So we are trying to solve that need for them. Since starting this role with Channel Program, it has shocked me how much work vendors do to be able to really provide like the best experiences for MSPs through customer enablement, MDF funds and stuff like that. And the MSPs just like don't know about it or they don't take advantage of it. So I think through education, we're really hoping to change that and hopefully better the MSP community as a whole.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff that goes into stuff that people don't use, to be honest. You know, yeah. Really true. 10,000% true. Yeah. And then it's like, you know, this constant battle of, well, I keep doing stuff for you, but if you don't know about it, why do I keep doing it? And then like, exactly. It's a circle a little bit. So yeah, I got you there for sure. Wow. I mean, that's a cool, yeah, you know, like it's like a software company, but also like, you know, in a different way, right? You're not selling anything per se. You're, you know, pulling information from multiple places, you know, into one area.
Yeah. So we've been really lucky up until a few weeks ago that vendors were our customers. So we were really able to provide the platform for free to MSPs because customers like BVoIP and customers like Axion and ThreatLocker and stuff, those were the guys that paid us. We did recently launch vendor contract management, which is that management of your vendor's side of the platform with notifications and spending and things like that. That is a paid feature. So I would say like that's only really recent. Okay. We've had some great feedback on that side of the business as well. MSPs have traditionally been keeping this either in their heads or in spreadsheets. And we're really trying to centralize that for them as well, especially for those MSPs that are looking to sell or be acquired in the near future. That's such a key component of being able to be prepared for that. So just trying to offer that at an affordable and attainable price as well. I have seen some of the stacks. I have seen some of the contract management and the amount of money that is being spent in software and vendors. It's absolutely blows my mind.
Well, I mean, next to labor, it's probably the next most expensive thing an MSP pays for. Let's be honest.
Absolutely insane. I mean, I was completely naive to it. I, especially because going to all of these events and you talk about like vendor pricing and stuff like that, when you really start to see it and it adds up, like it is insane.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if you ever ask an MSP, like, hey, how did you come up with your like landed price to your customer? I would say probably somewhere between 40 and 50% of their cost structure are what we're talking about right now, third-party products that are being kind of like put together and packaged, right, into whatever the plan is. I mean, yeah, I think it's a lot. It's that much. It could be more, actually, but I think it's in that range.
And I do think that having that visibility allows MSPs to be empowered to ensure they're pricing themselves properly, because that is another thing in our business that I have found is you guys are MSPs extremely undervalue themselves. The dream is that you guys don't have to pay for your vendor solutions at all, that you really should be passing those costs on to your clients. But until you really see it and you see where that money is being spent and how, I think it's hard for a lot of MSPs to wrap their mind around that. Also, the amount of overlap in products has absolutely blown me away. People paying for multiple products that essentially do the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And I can understand like some crossover and ensuring that bases are covered and things like that, but it is one of those things that I'm just kind of like, why? Like, how did this happen to you?
I'll take a guess stab at it. Somebody bought something a long time ago, and then somebody different bought something more recently. And like, those two, the left and the right, never talked. And then like, for some, like, depending on the size of the MSP, right? Like, not the same person as the one swiping the credit cards at all the events. And like, all of a sudden, like, you get, tool creep, right? But the other part is like, larger MSPs, in my experience, like, have like a group of people that meet on a like scheduled basis throughout the year to decide like new things they want to adopt or new vendors to evaluate, versus like smaller MSPs are just like kind of, by the hip, right? They're like, oh yeah, that looks good. But then the other problem on that side is, maybe something sits for 6 months before they even had a chance to like put it in, right? So, there's definitely a spectrum on both sides of that. But the overlap part, especially I would say with security solutions, is probably really obvious, if you pay attention, that there is a lot of overlap between multiple products. And that's probably a newer category for a lot of people, like last 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah. And Matt Solomon, our co-founder, actually did a survey of his LinkedIn community a few months ago about how often people were evaluating their technology stack. And a subset of them were doing it like every 30 to 60 days, which I think those businesses probably run a little bit more lean for
certain 30 reasons. To 60 days. Wow. Yeah, but then, how do you even have time to do that?
Right. But then there were a lot of companies that also were doing it like once a year, once every few years.
Yeah.
We're really hoping that Navistack and contract management will allow MSPs to like really own that side of their business a little bit more and hopefully save them money, save them time.
Yeah. Time, money. I like both of those things. I mean, I would say everybody has that problem one way or another. That's cool. Like, let me flip over to the other side, because you spent a large part of your journey on events and communities and planning. I think between the two of us, this is like a interesting topic, right? Because we've tackled this from different angles of the sandbox. I feel like you, between IT Glue and Avik, probably were in two very budget-rich situations, right? Like, you're kind of like, hey, the rich are richer and the poor are poorer kind of thing. Like,
I feel literally like just had this conversation with Matt in California last week at ASCII. Yes, I had millions and millions of dollars to spend at both of those companies.
Yeah. And so like, what you want to accomplish with that type of bank account behind you is completely different than some of the smaller vendors that are probably on, that you're working with today, right? Which is like, hey, we're swiping credit cards and like we're hoping that we make our money back in like a reasonable amount of time. I think probably at the other, IT Glue Avik, I mean, I'm not sure ROI was the first thing you guys had on your document.
So it was a little bit different at both events. IT Glue it was such an anomaly, and I'm so grateful to have been part of something like that, because their growth was just so disgustingly explosive that I don't even think ROI was really something that we were like, are we going to see this? Because we were onboarding 10, 20, 30 MSPs a day. Like, It was absolutely insane. And then when I did get to AVIC, obviously being there for 4 years versus only like a year and a bit at IT Glue before they were acquired, the goals of when we started and needing to see that ROI versus year three, four, when I was planning events changed a little bit, because I think what a lot of vendors, and maybe you could speak to this as well with BVoIP specifically, is that I think when you attend the amount of events that we do at the beginning, it's a lot about list building, brand awareness, getting like your business out there, like what differentiates you, why do people have to choose X, Y, Z. When you get into like year three, four, you've met a majority of the MSPs somewhere, because it's a very small subset of MSPs that go to events in general. There is probably, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think 50 to 60% of the MSPs that we want to do business with do not go to events. I think we see probably 40 to 50% of our target obtainable markets. So,
I mean, the number, I mean, realistically, and yes. We all probably, you know, all the people that we live in the sandbox with will hate to hear this, but it's true.
Yeah.
Single digit percentages of the total of possible MSPs to do business with go to events. Single digit.
And they're very much a core market. You want to get up into upmarket, and you want to get to those MSPs that work with like the Samsungs and the Apples and like those like true upmarket type of MSPs. They're not going to any events. So
like you're gonna have to put something really interesting in front of them to get them out.
Yes. So, which again, account-based marketing, something we probably all underutilize significantly in this type of industry. But with that being said, I think when you continue to go to events, and especially with BVoIP specifically being such a mature company in this space and being around for so long, your goals for going to events, I'm not so sure are net new as much as that's important, but a majority of your focus comes on partner enablement and upsell, cross-sell, things like that, those types of focuses. So I think to be able to look, and that is not taking into account that events are 10 times more expensive than they were in 2017. So
this is true. This
so
is very,
I think
very true.
The whole ROI conversation is really hard, because before pandemic, I had a bang up formula that if I could not go to an event for less than $100 cost per lead, chances are I was not going to see an ROI. But but now I can't even get a cost per lead to be anywhere near $100, because the not just the sponsorship costs to go anywhere, and that doesn't even include speaking or anything special that you want to do, the T&E has skyrocketed post pandemic. So like what flights cost $500 to go to Vegas 4 years ago now costs $800, $900, sometimes $1,000, depending on where you're going.
We're talking about US dollars or Canadian dollars?
Well, actually, funny enough, last year I did go to send a staff member to Kaseya Connect, and it was like $1,000. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's insanity to me. So that's US dollars. But even Canadian dollars, we've seen those costs go up too. And I mean, we have airline issues up here that factor into that and stuff, but everything has risen in cost. So for a vendor to spend money on an in-person event is getting more and more challenging to get that money back, which is also one of the reasons why I think I love your guys' block party option so much, is it gives the ability for those vendors to maybe sacrifice spending money on speaking or other things, but still being able to get that brand awareness, being able to get that list of MSPs and those contacts and that database building out of the way. And you guys are giving vendors that may be newer to the space that opportunity to build their databases that maybe they wouldn't get through like the traditional means as well.
Oh yeah. Like what's interesting, right? Like some of the people I'm talking about on the other side of the smaller side of the spectrum, I don't think they're getting anywhere near $100 per contact. Like,
no,
they're scared of that number.
Yeah.
100% scared. And like for 2 seconds, like you were able to get your own event off the ground at least one of them, right? Wasn't in California?
Yeah. So we at AVIC, we did Frankly MSP Live, which the goal though was really not selling. So like the vendors did not have traditional speaking time. Like, obviously, Dado, Rob Ray was so gracious and gave me like a significant amount of money to help do that off. But he only really, he moderated a panel. Like, he did not get the traditional Rob Ray stage time, moderated a panel and did like a 30 second fire rapid pitch, which if you've never seen Rob Ray do a 30 second fire pitch, humbling experience. Okay. But so he moderated a panel, and even then he flew in his own panelists for it. So like our goal with that event was very much like, leave your businesses behind, come to this overpriced, expensive Ritz-Carlton resort, because I've got champagne taste. And luckily Avik gave me like an upscale beer budget. We weren't exactly like where I would love to be on that, but
can I say that the champagne budget is the upscale beer,
so I really pushed my limits with that event, but the goal was to really for MSPs to like leave their businesses behind. We encourage them to bring their families. If nobody has been to the Ritz-Carlton Bacara in Santa Barbara, highly recommended. It is by far one of my favorite resorts I've ever been to. It was really intimate. We capped it at 200 MSPs. We kept the vendor room very, very small. And it was really all about networking and education and like how to level up your business going into the next year. And I'm very fortunate that MSPs still talk about that event. They absolutely loved it. And the goal was to not make money off of it. All we wanted to do was Avik's portion that we paid was to be on par with what it would cost to go to an IT Nation, which at that time, 75, 80 grand is what we were spending a year for our booth and speaking and stuff like that. And we were able to stay within budget. We were very lucky. But it was great to see MSPs be able to respond to that versus a lot of the events in the traditional sense that we see now be really sales focused and like hammering like those 4-hour booth times and like visit the vendors, be sold to, which sometimes gets sacrificed on that education front a little bit.
1,000% yes. 1,000% yes, especially education. That's actually the kind of veiled pitch, you know, kind of embedded there. You know, like I feel like that's the ultimate bait and switch, but I digress. That some people are good at that. Let's flip over to the fact that, you know, I definitely saw you at a few times out of the country. And when I say out of the country, I know I'm from the United States. So like US and Canada, two separate countries. We're all in the same space, right? So like across oceans.
Yes. I think we did your London party. Mm-hmm. And then I think that we'd done a few stuff together in Australia, which I was really fortunate to be down there with Alec a few times. Those markets, so those, again, like when you're talking about like sales strategy and vendor growth and stuff like that, selling to MSPs in the United States is, in my opinion, super easy.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy. You get over to the UK and you get over into the EMEA markets, it's a whole different beast. And then you have the MSPs in Australia who I feel walk around with cash guns and are happy to like throw money at anything that's shiny. But then getting them to onboard and utilize it is like such a struggle. And then you have more of those like churn discussions. And then that doesn't even touch on the support that each country and each region needs on top of that. Like they're such different beasts. So with IT Glue, we actually didn't really go into EMEA or Australia until after the Kaseya acquisition. We were very, very North American based when we sold to Kaseya. We, I think, did DatoCon EMEA and maybe like IT Nation London, but like we were not actively over there. But Avik did have like a very strategic EMEA focus plan and APAC focus plan. But again, the struggles and the needs that come across with broadening your markets like that are so different. And the ROI is tougher to get also. So
based on your entire journey, including now Channel Program, do you feel North American-based companies going the other way have it better? Or is it easier for a company out of APAC or EMEA to come into the US?
So I'm going to be really candid in my answer in this. I think a lot of products that I have seen come out of Australia struggle with marketing to North America. Mm-hmm. And the go-to-market strategy is very different. Mm-hmm. I think the UK may be a little bit easier, but that's because I think they have exposure to the resources of other vendors and North American markets. They're more exposed to it than I think a lot of the people in Australia are. I think you see some anchor venue, like vendors in both areas. You have your Pax8s, your ConnectWises, your Kaseyas in all markets. But I think if you're an independent vendor coming out of EMEA or coming out of APAC, unless your go-to-market strategy for North America is extremely tight and the way that you're able to sell the value prop on your solution is targeted to the way that North Americans take in new solutions and the education around that, I find that a lot of them struggle.
Crossing oceans is a problem. That's what I'm hearing. And
either direction, but I think crossing oceans for vendors in North America primarily, and then EMEA and APAC, you're more so adjusting to buying cycles and how each region absorbs products and chooses to bring on solutions into their business. Whereas EMEA and APAC, I think coming into North America, the struggle is messaging and targeting. That's just my opinion, though.
I mean, you've been, you're three companies deep in the sandbox. I mean, there's definitely value what we're talking about. Obviously, you've seen a lot of people come and go through all these organizations, and just generally, right? The sandbox is always in flux. If you were to give advice to, younger Caitlin that's coming out of college and maybe not the best college experience, in your time machine, what do you know now, many years deep into this, that you didn't know then that you wish you knew?
I think that there is a responsibility that people in the channel like myself and like you have to educate the new people coming up. And I think the value of mentorship in this space is so important in order to keep the ecosystem that's been created within the channel going. I wish that I took advantage a little bit more of asking questions and creating partnerships and relationships with more of like the older people that had been around and seen it, because I think it does come around full circle fully. And what a lot of those veterans that are now retiring out of the MSP channel saw is eventually going to come back. And unless we provide that education and that guidance to the younger generations that are really hoping to like carry this channel forward, I think it's going to be a rough road.
One of those, if you don't pay attention to history, it seems to repeat itself kind of things.
Yeah. I also think like we have to listen to what the community wants. At the end of the day, as vendors, the MSPs are really what's going to drive this industry forward. It's not going to be the vendors. So if the MSPs are standing up and protesting something, I think we have to listen to that, which I think you guys are doing a great job with the MSP initiative, events and stuff like that. The MSPs are screaming for more education and more content that isn't just sales pitches. With that being said, I do have to say a caveat. Any vendor that goes to an event, it has to be a lightly veiled sales pitch. We have to see our ROI somehow. But the way that you go about it, I think, speaks volumes about how tapped into the MSP market you are. But then I also think that vendors have to find their voice. And the event model right now is completely unsustainable. And there is a subset, and it's a large, large subset of vendors are not going to be able to support the traditional events in our space if prices continue to rise and audience continues to diminish. And I don't think any changes are going to happen unless the vendors start to speak out about that.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, agree on a lot of things you said, including the part that like the unsustainable part of it, right? Like, like the big companies, and you came from some pretty sizable companies that had budgets, right? That are at hundreds of events a year, right? Like I know our friends over at ThreatLocker, I think, are doing like 50
burn rate. Their burn rate is insane.
Yeah. It's crazy. And they're everywhere, right? Because they have the money to do it.
And one interesting thing, I love ThreatLocker. They're one of my very dear partners, but no one pays the same price. I've also noticed on their licensing model. So I'm like, how is
how
this?
Good how a negotiator are you?
Is this how you're doing it? There's some people paying 97 cents and there's some people paying like $6. And I'm like, damn, but they are everywhere and they have a very, very loyal user base.
Yeah, no, but I mean, they are like, I think about 50, like, what is that, 600 events a year that you're going to, like, that's besides your own things. Wow. That is a lot.
Yeah.
I have to give, you know, like, kudos over to, I guess, Heather Hartland and her team over there. I don't even know how you keep track of it all.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
Their internal processes and cogs and the way they run their business must be so finely dialed in. It's either finely dialed in or it's complete chaos and not a single person knows what's going on.
Maybe.
But, yeah, but I don't think it could be in the middle. Because with the amount of events that they attend and the money that they spend to not be able to attribute that back to ROI in some way, like I just couldn't picture it. I mean, unless Denny's just like does not care.
Somebody but cares.
Somebody cares. Like if you're giving away $150,000 vehicles at like every one of your events, somebody probably cares whether or not.
Yeah, somebody's paying attention to them, I'm sure.
Yeah. Again, I think that they're like, they're such an anomaly. I think when you look at the BVoips, for example, I think that you guys are a very well-established vendor. You have budget. You guys are clearly doing great things. You have a very loyal customer base. Are you going to be able to spend $75,000 for a 10x10 at certain events in 2 years?
I mean, the answer is, does it make sense, right? Like, everybody has money. I hope everybody, but by the way, I have a very soft spot for, you know, the people who go out on a tree branch, taking out their debit or credit card saying, hey, you know, like I'm going to take a shot. And then like bad things could come from that. Right. Like it is a risk. Don't fool yourself. And so like, I, you know, as somebody who has been in multiple chairs on this conversation, like when I take somebody else's money, I'm like, I almost treat that money more reverently than my own. Right. It's like, hey, you know, like I got to make sure that you're doing the right thing and we're not going down a wrong path here for you because I don't want you to end up in a bad place. Like that's how I feel because that's what kind of happened to me in the early days. And then I learned. And some people don't get chance two and three and four, right? Like, you know, they blow their resources and then it's done. That being said, like the landscape has changed a bit. And I know a lot of net new companies today are coming in already with funding. You know, or investors, where before it was like, no, you had to prove your idea first, and then you'd maybe go out and do that. I guess I'm one of the very few that like said, no, we're going to do this on our own, and we're going to bootstrap it, and like we're just going to go the hard way. And I think that's a little bit of Philly in me that, you know, just like to get beat up a little bit. But that being said, I mean, you know, like it's we, you know, the when I remember I said earlier, right? You came from a very big bank account, and your objectives were different, right? I came from a what is the best stretch of these resources I can actually get to? It's a different game. It's a different approach.
It is. Could you picture yourself 7 years ago attending the events that you do now with the prices that they are today? Like, would you have been able to justify like a lot of what you're getting out of these events that are costing $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 to go to? And that's just censorship.
It's worse. It's worse than it was, I would argue, because like they cost more. And so at the end of the day, like, well, two things are happening and maybe you see it differently. But the way I see it is the deliverables come down in order to get your price to not go up. Right. Like, so you're getting less and then you got to get crafty. I don't know if that's the, you know, creative outside of the box to try and find a way to get that level back to a point where you can make it work.
Yes.
And not everybody is thinking that way, let's be honest.
Yes. And there have been a lot of event conversations that I've had about sponsorship where they've come to me with an increased price, but I'm getting less than what I paid last year. Mm-hmm. So it is tough and it's hard to find a balance. And for a lot of what I'm sure is probably going to be new vendors on listening to this or watching this after the fact, your sponsorship cost, an event does not cost 75 grand.
No.
You have to take into T&E. You have to take into consideration like any other expenses, new booths, marketing materials, any paid advertising, your internal costs. What is your staff cost, their time out of the office, the time they put into market XYZ? These events, some of the larger ones end up costing companies so much money. Yeah. So for even a company to be like, hey, it's 30 grand for a 10 by 10 booth, it's not 30 grand.
No.
And I think that that is a conversation that maybe vendors aren't having enough, is that you can preach all day long that you're throwing an affordable event, but the event's not affordable if they're spending 5 grand, 10 grand in T&E to get there. It's very easy to get that cost creep. And I think that the companies that you see be cognizant of that, and the ones that are aware of where they're spending their money, including people at T&E resources, things like that, those are the ones that I think you really see be successful. And that was something that I really learned at AVIC, was we had to account for everything. I personally reconciled every single event on a 3, 6, and 12 month basis to determine ROI. Whereas I was very fortunate, IT Glue, we didn't have to do that. Anytime something came up, you'd call Chris Day and he'd be like, is it cool? And you'd be like, yeah, it's pretty cool. And you'd be like, do it. So it was two very different experiences. But again, I think the companies were even like apples to oranges. The amount of rapid growth we had at IT Glue allowed us a lot more liberties and freedom in terms of what our event goals were. And a lot of it never ended up becoming partner engagement. It was always be the biggest, the loudest. Mm-hmm. AVIC, we had to be a little bit more strategic. And as many millions of dollars that I've spent in this industry, I have lost a lot of money for the companies that I've partnered with as well. And it is because of those same reasons, George, is that sometimes you get sucked into spending money with somebody and it doesn't end up being exactly what you like or what you're hoping for, and then you don't get that ROI. And then you have to explain that away too. So it's always a gamble, especially with new events. But I think as a vendor, if you're really like honed in on like what your goals are and like what you need in order to like see a success versus a failure, I think you're able to make more like educated decisions in our industry as a whole.
That's fair. Listen, practical experience and good advice. I mean, so if it is a gamble, the house always wins then.
There are a few houses in our industry that are always winning. And I think we know who those are without me directly saying it. Mm-hmm. But again, like, I think you can look at a few of our industry events, the bigger ones, and you can ask yourself, like, is it really about the MSP audience? Is it really about educating and growing businesses? Or is it really about like the cool stuff that they're doing for you after hours, or like,
yeah,
the additional? Well,
I mean, let's be honest though, for a second, some people, I call them the professional event goer people, like they're going for a trip, right? They're going, I don't know if you want to straight out say vacation, but they're going for a trip. The destination matters. The after hours part is what they're going for. I always talk about the Vegas effect, right? Where it's like, how many, like I got to the point where I was like, oh, the events in Vegas. Yeah. I'm good. I'm not good.
Yes.
Why? You're like, because yeah. I'll tell you, it's like 25% of the people won't even show up to collect their badge. Like another 25% of people will show up to collect their badge because they think somebody's got to check on them, and then they'll disappear. And yeah. Then they disappear into the strip to never be seen again. And like, maybe they got home, maybe they didn't, don't know. So they, like,
it's extremely, extremely tough,
mm-hmm.
For vendors and for attendees. Mm. I love a good event in Vegas, but that's because like, I love to gamble. And so fun fact about me. Yeah. I love to gamble. And Vegas, like, I'm like even on the fence about going to Kaseya.
Wow.
Like, I mean, MGM, I'd never leave the MGM resort. Every time we're down there, I'm like inside for 7 days.
Wow.
I love Vegas.
Is there a positive balance in your bank account after 7 days?
So if from our conversation, which I think has been extremely valuable, if no one takes anything away from this, take this. If you go to Vegas, when you leave, gamble at the gates, the slot machine at the gates, because the slot machines there are subsidized by the government. So the threshold for the odds are extremely low, and it is very rare that you do not leave with all or most of your money back.
So for all you people about to get on planes to go to Right of Boom.
Yep.
this upcoming gamble. Week. There's some
advice. Have a good time, but go to the airport early. Gamble at the airport, subsidized by the government. Do not do it in the smoking areas, and do not do it in the hallways around all the shops. You want to do it at the gates because those ones have the lowest threshold of odds.
How about that? That is a cool little piece of advice coming out of that I wasn't expecting. So we got a couple of themes going, right? One, directional, which side you're coming from, which side of the ocean matters, and it could be more difficult or less. We got younger people coming up really, need to be shepherded and like mentored by the people that are in it, or else, things could get a little bit crazy. We got the event thing is just all over the map and maybe even a little bit unsustainable. And like, can you make it make sense depending on what your financial situation is? We got some gambling advice, which is good. So
I do have to put a disclaimer that I'm not responsible for anybody losing all of their money either at a casino in Vegas on the strip or at the airport.
There it is. We'll see what happens. Okay, I'm down. Let's talk about just traveling in general. Like, you're in a unique situation where like you're flying out of the most expensive city to live in North America, right? Vancouver area. So like,
it's on Vancouver Island. Yep. And Times Magazine put Victoria as the most expensive city in the world last year.
Okay. So for people who don't know where Victoria is, that's in Canada. Yes.
It's in Canada. We're right above the San Juan Islands off of the coast of Washington.
Okay.
I am a 2-hour ferry ride from Vancouver.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why did you choose to live on an island that takes 2 hours to get anywhere?
So my parents are here and I grew up here, and I absolutely, in the summertime, this place is phenomenal. If you've never been, you should definitely visit. Getting off of the island has increasingly been a pain in my ass for the last 2 years that I have lived here. If I cannot get a direct flight off of the island, I do have to take a ferry and then fly out of YVR. So when Matt and Kevin joke that it takes me trains, planes, and automobiles to like get anywhere for these events, that is definitely not a lie. Yeah, it's pretty wild. Sometimes if I can go through Seattle, it's usually pretty easy because Alaska does fly directly from Seattle to the island. But a lot of the time I do have to go over to Vancouver to catch a reasonable flight, either time and layover wise or price wise, because anytime you fly to the island, for some reason, your flight increases like $400 or $500 for some reason.
Wow. Well, hopefully it's worth it.
Definitely worth it.
For everyone involved, right? For the travel budget at Channel Program and for your own sanity.
Yeah.
But that makes it a little bit interesting then, right? Because like, I think I saw that Standards is on a webinar with you about points, but
yes,
we joke about this traveling thing all the time. We have slightly different challenges, me and Alec. I have more of a security barrier to deal with, and he has all these lounges you want to go to, but I digress.
Yeah.
It is definitely, story ridden with all sorts of craziness.
So when I was living in Waterloo with Avik, I could be very dedicated to Air Canada. I had status. I was living the lounge life. Alec and I were able to bond over this experience. I, living on the island, I am like, how can I get off of here in the most cost and time effective way? I've not been able to be dedicated to an airline. I have no status. I think if I didn't have Nexus, which is like Clear or TSA PreCheck for Canadians, I would waste just as much time in the airport everywhere as I probably do just trying to get on a plane on a regular basis. So I'm excited to see. As soon as I wanted to put together that webinar, I was like, Alex Stanners has got to be my boy for it, because he has cracked the points game so well. And Matt is very dedicated to Southwest. He has a lot of like perks with Southwest. Kelsey, I think, is also Delta. And then I have not talked to Paul Redding about his experience with it, but Alec told me like he is like the godfather of points and like has all the credit cards and like does all of that stuff. I'm like, I have nothing.
It will be a very informational and topical webinar, I think. When's that for everybody who wants to go there?
Yeah, so that's going to be on March 22nd at, it is currently at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but we are springing forward next week, I believe. So it may end up being 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay. So if you want to learn about hacking and cracking, well, I mean, there's the points guy, right? Like, that's his whole business.
Yeah, but he's like next level, isn't he?
Yeah, then there's the people who actually have to make it happen, right? And they're not getting paid by the people who say they're the points guy. So definitely check out that one. For, you know, I was just joking with somebody on a call yesterday. I was like, you know, I was like, between me and him, and we probably, you know, like we both do probably more than, I don't know, 200,000 air miles a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many stories. Crazy. We could probably have our own reality TV show at this point.
I mean, he sends me photos of him in like lounges, like all over the world, and like the food that he's eating and stuff. And I was just like, I just like grab my smoothie at Tim Hortons, like on the way to the gate, like a normal human being. So like, thank
right?
you.
I mean, like, yeah,
I do appreciate you value Chick-fil-A points more than you value airline points though. And I think that that's 100%. Why I appreciate you more.
Thank you. Because like when I go to Chick-fil-A, like I'm in like the top 10 Chick-fil-A people that go frequent my local Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was like a leaderboard inside of the Chick-fil-A. Like I learned this recently. And so I'm on the leaderboard. I'm in the top, I think 10, I think top five. But, you know, like, you know, I know my people, right? Like I roll up, which shooting, you know, like everybody knows everybody. Like it's like
yeah.
a neighborhood at the Chick-fil-A. I don't know. Just
if they had that type of point system for Shake Shack though, like I would be all over it. We need Shake Shack points.
You should seeing how you're like their number one fan, you should probably send them, you know, a hint or idea, no?
Canada's getting its first Shake Shack actually in Toronto, I think later this year.
Yeah, but Toronto is like a planet away for you.
100%. But the thought of actually going for opening day to Toronto Shake Shack has 100% crossed my mind. So
if you're going to frequent a Shake Shack, I would say we'll probably be in like Seattle. Be
yes, Seattle does have a few now. Yeah. But I was just recently in Phoenix and they had one in the airport and I was just like the happiest. I left for the airport early just to go to Shake Shack. So
my Chick-fil-A is your Shake Shack. That's what it is.
Yes.
I guess is Alex Lounge Pass.
Yeah, Alex values the comforts of travel. I'm going to Bangkok and Thailand next year. And Alex saw my Facebook on that. And he was like, 20 hours in economy. And I was like, oh my God, listen. I'm 5'2". It's literally any airline seat is premium economy for me.
Yeah, I'm not that much taller than you, 5'4" over here. But by the way, I'm taking economy to Australia next week, pal. I don't know what you're talking about.
Did he take economy? Have you approved that expense yet? He'll get the upgrade.
You know what it is? Yeah, he'll get the super upgrade, like automatic. And I'll be like, all right, dude, it's cool. Like, I don't like, oh, but you know what it is? I'll leave you with this idea. This will really make you happy. So I guess before the pandemic, Delta and Virgin Australia had like a thing, like a partnership.
Yeah.
No longer. So he can't like, there's no bougie in airplane, you know, bar that you sit at or anything like that. He has to take like a just standard and he's a little salty over it. And I'm just like, so you're flying like the rest of us and that's a problem for you?
Look at what you've bred, George, over the last 6 years. A monster.
Oh, yes. I have definitely said this travel addiction for sure. I
love him. But his dedication to the luxuries of travel, I mean, heaven forbid something ever happens. He is not able to get those status milestones every year. He's going to have a rude awakening.
Yeah. I think that's part of the gig. I think that's how the exchange works here at B-Boy for in that case. So yeah. I digress.
I mean, so I would be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit jealous.
Okay. I'm sure he'll poke on that because I'm sure he'll watch it. Yep. We should have done this way sooner. I apologize. That's on me.
No, don't be sorry. I'm really glad that we were able to make it happen. I had a lot of fun.
No, this was great. We should definitely do it again. But even better, I'm sure I'll see you somewhere in person soon. Cause like, that's just that's how things usually go. So this session was absolutely recorded. Caitlin, where do you want to send people to learn more about channel program?
Yeah, just go to channelprogram.com. It's completely free for MSPs to sign up. I assure you, you have to click a lot of buttons in order to get to any type of pay screen on our website. So definitely check out the website, check out all of our vendor partners. We have a 135-ish official partners, but you can find thousands and thousands of products and vendor solutions on the site. So take a look. And if you have any questions, you can reach out to me directly at caitlin@channelprogram.com.
Caitlin with a C.
The C.
Awesome. You will find this recorded session on both your podcatcher, our YouTube channel, and MSPinitiative.com under sessions. We keep doing these. I'm actually going to be, I think I got one more this week. And then next week I'll be down under with, yes, the aforementioned Alex Danners. So somebody will probably be filling in for me next week, but we keep these going and we can't wait to see you guys out on the road as well. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for watching and listening. Caitlin, see you on the flip side, hopefully at a Shake Shack near you, and for everyone else, catch you on the flip side.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Bye.